Good afternoon, everyone.
You're driving towards.
Good afternoon. We'll get started here. Andrew, any opening prayers or comments?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I will just take 1 second. So today, again, we're going to hear from PBOT, the Bureau of Transportation, as well as Water and BES. And I did want to just note, for those watching at home, we are posting all of the performance dashboards that you've seen in these sessions over the last few weeks, including those today. They are up online. And so we're going to be looking over the next couple of weeks for final feedback from, again, council, from the budget committee, from the bureaus, as well as from the public. And so to the extent anybody wants to go on, we will have a way to sort of send in some comments and thoughts on what those key performance measures should be. We'll take all that into account, and then council, as they go through the final budget process, again, we'll be finalizing those key performance measures and dashboards for every bureau. You can find those at portlandoregon.gov/CBO/performance. And with that, we can go.
And your proposed ad packages.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the council. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you with an update on our budget request. Today I am joined by Greg Jones, my assistant director, and Alyssa Mahar, executive director of business operations. Over the last year, we've spent an enormous amount of time with the City Council and the community discussing the need for additional transportation funding and potential revenue options. We still remain hopeful that the state legislature will take action to increase transportation funding during the current session. I would like to thank all of you for your work over the last year in helping us engage the public about the city's needs for additional transportation funding. I believe that two positive elements came out of that process at a minimum, and one is some restored confidence and transparency in this Bureau's ability to manage its resources, and also agreement that the Bureau needs additional funding. We also have learned that it's clear now that the cost of inaction is going to lead to higher costs in the future, and it's going to place a larger unfunded liability for future generations. So I've structured my presentation today in three parts. First, there's an overview of the Portland Progress effort, a brief summary of our current budget allocation, and a summary of our decision packages. As you're well aware, our ability to show that we are good stewards of our existing public resources is directly linked to the public's willingness to support additional transportation funding. So we have gone above and beyond the Our Streets conversation to build an organization that's transparent, outcome-based, and accessible to the public. This has been done through the development of the Portland Progress Plan. Portland Progress is a 2-year action plan to improve overall services and increase the public's confidence that we are using our limited resources as effectively and efficiently as possible. It spans all aspects of the Bureau's operations and sets the agency's sight on serving Portland's core values of life, safety, health, and economic well-being. This plan is important because it holds us accountable for our actions to build and manage the transportation system, and will continue to build upon the public's trust in our work. The plan includes 176 ambitious and actionable steps that are grouped into 6 themes: preserve what we have built and operate it well, embrace Vision Zero, build a future where all can grow and thrive, effectively manage city assets, and contribute to the health and vitality of our people and planet. And we also developed a 6th theme that's an internal work plan, and it's called Shoring Up the Foundation. The themes and action items were heavily influenced by the outreach efforts from Our Streets that included 2 citywide scientific polls and public opinion polls and 11 public town hall meetings. From that public outreach, we heard that funding unmet maintenance and safety needs were the highest priorities and of almost equal importance. The first 2 themes in Portland Progress, preserving what we have built and operating it well, and embracing Vision Zero, correspond directly to the Our Streets priorities on safety and maintenance. In addition to this outreach, Portland Progress action items are informed by the multiple long-range plans that guide all city agencies: the Portland Plan, the Comprehensive Plan, Climate Action Plan, and specifically to our bureau, the Transportation System Plan. With the combination of the Our Streets conversations and the Portland Progress 2-Year Work Plan, we have a clear path moving forward for PBOT. The next three slides illustrate where our current funding goes, and the remainder of the presentation focuses on the resources we need in order to keep us on the path forward. We have, do you want to hand this stuff out for now so people can start looking at it? The majority of PBOT funding goes into three areas. 26% of our funding request is allocated to maintenance activities, 32% to operations and safety, and 38% goes to capital investments. And I ask you to please remember that capital improvements are not all new programs. Our capital improvements budget focuses heavily on rehabilitations and rebuilding existing assets. For maintenance, our budget is allocated to cost-effective and efficient maintenance activities to keep the transportation system functioning. For example, our fog seal and 2-inch grind and pave programs allow us to reach our goal of conducting preventative maintenance on over 100 miles of pavement. In the next fiscal year, we are adding crack sealing of our busy streets to our pavement maintenance toolbox. This is a low-cost solution that's going to help us better preserve our system with our limited dollars. Go back one. I'm on safety. Number 7? Yeah, thanks. PBOT's requested budget allocates 32% to the operations of the transportation system. This work includes keeping traffic signals operating, streets clean, managing parking, and managing the use of right-of-way. In the requested budget, we are expecting that engineering staff will review over 1,000 requests for traffic safety investigations, 18,000 requests for parking enforcement, and 16,000 complaints about abandoned autos, just to name a few. At the same time, our operations staff will be using our Vision Zero approach to developing Portland's transportation system plan and expanding the use of existing safety programs like the High Crash Corridor and Safe Routes to School. And Portland is not alone in embracing the concept of Vision Zero. On a national scale, there's bipartisan support in Congress, AARP has supported the vision, and local jurisdictions across the country are implementing Vision Zero concepts. PBOT's budget allocates 38% to capital improvements. Again, a large chunk of our capital improvements funding goes to asset management and preservation. The majority of our capital budget comes from grant funding, which requires we go through a competitive process to get the projects funded. And additionally, most of the grants require a match. The amount of grant funds has declined as a result of the federal and state funding issues, but despite that, we have been able to build some key safety projects. We have been able to build priority safety projects in East Portland, such as adding sidewalks and crossing improvements. We were able to build these projects as a result of Representative Fagan's leadership in obtaining funds through ODOT to complete the work. Over one-third of all the revenue allocated to the capital program pays for asset management, things like bridges and overpasses and signal and streetlight replacement. Other key projects that are opening in the next year include the Tillicum Crossing, completing the streetcar loop, and the completion of the St. John's truck strategy. So I briefly described the three main areas where we spend our revenue. The majority of the revenue we are requesting in our 15-16 budget is from external sources and restricted to a specific use. These external sources include grants, bonds, and interagency agreements. PBOT's discretionary revenue that gives us the most flexibility in our spending primarily comes from parking and gas tax. Our 15-16 budget relies heavily on the kindness of strangers. 61%, or approximately $141 million of our total revenue comes from external sources, or the kindness of others. From the pie chart, you can see that 9% comes from bond proceeds, 14% from interagencies that are dedicated to specific services, 11% from grants dedicated to specific projects, 11% comes from gas tax needed for debt service and other obligations, and 16% comes from gas tax that is available for transportation programs. One of the things that really stands out about Portland's success in creating a complete transportation system is how often diverse agencies, neighbors, and business groups have been able to work together to develop new partnerships that allow us to accomplish multiple objectives. I would like to highlight two key partnerships that you see in our budget request and are excellent examples of our focus on Vision Zero and equity. The first is the funding from the PPS school bond that is strategically making traffic safety improvements at Portland schools using a safety and equity lens. The second is a renewed partnership between ODOT and PBOT to use new federal safety funding to fund key safety improvements at high crash locations. Despite the challenges with our discretionary revenue, we continually strive to make the most of our limited resources. Some examples of areas where we have improved efficiencies and been able to save money is with the conversion of our streetlights from high-pressure sodium to LED.
If you could just wrap up, please.
These microphones may still work.
One more time.
I don't know how long.
I don't know if that'll reach.
Sure.
Sweet.
Test.
Okay. That's on? What? Yeah. All right. I think I was on LED. We've implemented a new low-cost pavement preservation technique, fog seal, that allows us to preserve many more miles of streets per year. And we're in the process of scoping utility coordination software that will help us coordinate with all the utilities that work in the right-of-way to minimize the amount of pavement cuts, which degrade our pavement system. We just received three innovation grants, the Honeybee Bike Counter, rubber sidewalks, and graffiti treatment. The rubber sidewalk funding is especially exciting, not only because it provides asset management resources, but also because of its potential benefits to property owners in our older neighborhoods with a dense tree canopy. While these sidewalks are expected to be more expensive to install, we believe they will work better with the tree roots and therefore save adjacent property owners money in future years. Unfortunately, there is only so far that we can go in meeting our transportation needs without additional funding. The cost of inaction is enormous and immediate. Over the last year, you've heard quite a bit about PBOT's assets and the decline of our system's condition, especially our 5,000 lane miles of pavement. PBOT owns and maintains 13 asset classes, from street signs to bridges. Our pavement system is the highest valued asset we own, it valued at $6 billion. Over the last 3 years, the amount of money needed to meet our goals for the condition of our busy and residential streets has increased. In 2013, the unmet need was $75 million. Last year, it increased to $91 million, and with this year's analysis, the need is $118 million a year for the next 10 years. Fixing a street in fair condition is less expensive than fixing a street in poor condition. As the pavement deteriorates, the options for repair change and become much more expensive. Portland is also home to about 15% of the state's population, but suffers 22% of the state's crashes. The number of people killed on Portland roadways has remained stubbornly flat over the last 20 years. In 2013, 36 people died in traffic crashes in Portland, more than double the number of homicides in the city. The economic and societal costs of these crashes are immense. The CDC estimates the cost of lost work and medical costs due to traffic fatalities to be $422 million a year in the state of Oregon. The National Safety Council pegs the cost of traffic fatalities and injuries to be $150 million to the city of Portland alone. Achieving Vision Zero for Portland would result in significant savings across our economy and eliminate the serious and fatal crashes that congest our roadways and irrevocably alter the lives of the families involved. While much of our existing infrastructure is integral to the safety of our system, we also have many missing links that limit people's access to a complete transportation network. Through asset management, we know what the physical condition needs are, and we know where we need to fill in missing links to ensure the functionality of our system is complete. This means that we have a complete system of sidewalks, paved streets, access to transit, and pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure. We have a lot of work to do. We have approximately 341 miles of missing sidewalks on our busy streets. It would cost $700 million to build out that system. In our ADA transition plan, we have a goal of building 700 to 1,000 ADA accessible corners per year. We still have approximately 20,500 corners that need to be upgraded to meet ADA standards. We have 56 centerline miles of dirt and gravel roads. To pave those and bring them to city standards would cost $600 million. Both new transportation revenue and allocation for major maintenance and replacement projects through this budget process would help us manage the existing infrastructure system and address our missing link. We have real potential to prevent the further decline of our system and improve the safety for all users. We can assume that with our current pavement budget and the new revenue from our streets funding and the increase of the state gas tax of 10 cents, that we can keep the percentage of very poor roads on busy streets from getting worse than they are now. And do we want to hand that out here? Did we do that?
Sure.
So we have an example of how much money per pavement type would be needed over the next 10 years per year for our busy streets and then our residential streets. So this is for your, it's probably familiar to you guys, we use it in the R streets. But it's updated. Next, I'll talk about our transportation decision packages that were included in our budget request. We are generally very happy with the recommendations of the CBO, especially the resources to address some of our critical maintenance and safety needs. Our top priority request was for $5 million for safety and maintenance projects identified in the Our Streets effort. CBO recommended funding $2.2 million. The request would pay for safety improvements on and around 122nd Avenue. The proposed safety improvements are targeted at expanding access to work, schools, and services for low and moderate income individuals and families via public transit. This project meets the maintenance, equity, opportunity, and complete neighborhood goals. PBOT's second and largest request was for $23.3 million in major maintenance and infrastructure replacement projects. CBO recommended funding $5.5 million. I would like to thank the Council for increasing funds for this program. I have received positive feedback from numerous neighborhood and business leaders that this commitment of unanticipated revenue to core infrastructure needs is a smart policy decision and a sign that the city is committed to finding additional transportation revenue. We look forward to working with the City Budget Office to have a process that best supports this new program. We requested funds for the Youth Bus Pass. We requested funding to cover this because PBOT has been asked to provide funding for this program in the past, although it doesn't have resources allocated for it. This is not included in our five-year budget, so if we are to absorb this, it would cost us $5 million over the next 5 years in service reductions. We requested $300,000 to expand our Safe Routes to School program to middle school students. The CBO recommended $60,000 to provide funding to OPAL to hire our two youth organizers. We requested a position to support our agreement with BPS and TriMet to focus on combined investments around key transit corridors. Additional studies and analyses are required to support these efforts, and this request would support research and recommendations in key corridors where we expect growth to occur, such as Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, Southeast Division, and the Burnside-Stark Corridor. We requested funding for a recommendation of how to deal with state highways in the city. It would provide funding to work with the state legislature, ODOT, neighbors, and businesses to develop short and long-term strategies to improve and ultimately transfer these roads to the city of Portland. We requested funding for an LID value capture. The request would help the city determine how future city revenue realized after a local improvement district is formed could be used to lower costs for making improvements to gravel streets. And we also requested $25,000 as our ongoing cost for traffic control support for last Thursdays. We requested funding for our Smart Trips programs. Smart Trip is the program that encourages alternative transportation choices. We want to make sure that everybody who lives, works, or runs a business in Portland knows about the options they have for getting around. Because by choosing to walk, bike, take transit, and carpool, we increase fitness, save money, reduce traffic congestion, and help maintain a livable environment. The package would specifically have extended Portland's Smart Trips program to East and North Portland, with a focus on culturally specific outreach in the Jade District, New Columbia, and Hacienda areas. I'm now going to turn this over to Marianne Fitzgerald, who is representing our Budget Advisory Committee.
Is this where, oh, they're back.
Okay, we're back. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioner Novick, Commissioner Fritz, Salzman, and Fish. I'm representing the full Budget Advisory Committee today. We met several times between September of 2014 and January of 2015, and as a group, we reviewed the financial forecast, the capital improvement plan, and the PBOT service charges and fees. As you could see throughout the budget, it's essentially status quo. That's really not sustainable due to the over-reliance on the gas tax, the parking fees, and grants. At our January meetings, we discussed performance measures and decision packages, but we were more of a sounding board. We didn't really make any specific recommendations on either the decision packages or the performance measures. We wrote the back letter that is in your packet on January 20th, and we realized after the budget was published that a few things changed in between January 20th and February 2nd. So I'll just talk about our three main recommendations that are in our letter today. To expand transportation revenues, to focus on core PBOT priorities, and enhance the role of the BAC. So the first one, with enhancing revenues, we really wanted to thank Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick for their efforts to pass the street fee. And several of us are working with our local legislators to fund local priorities and support the gas tax potential. But we're looking at East Portland, the Cully neighborhood, and Capitol Highway in Southwest Portland as potential high-priority projects that we would really like to get funded in our neighborhoods. We also supported the utility license fee, but that was before your decision on January 28th to get rid of that policy. So we always felt that there was a strong nexus between the utility license fee and using the right-of-way with the maintenance of our streets, but that's, you know, that policy's changed since then. The third thing that we wanted to support is using more of the general fund. Things like the streetcar have benefits to economic development more than actually the transportation system. And streetcar, or last Thursday, is another example where there are no benefits to PBOT, really, but we're using some scarce resources for that could use general funds to support the same kind of services. And then the interagency funding. I think last year, the Bureau of Environmental Services cut the street cleaning funds, and they've not been restored. And, you know, PBOT and BES share a lot of responsibility for the streets and the stormwater quality. But last fall, I just want to commend you that BES and PBOT signed a coordination charter, and I was so excited when I saw that you know, it really gives me a lot of hope for a lot of win-wins between the Bureau as we work together more in the future.
Marianne, we thought that after reaching that deal, the Iranian nuclear deal would be just a snap.
Yeah, well, we're going to continue working on that one, both of them. So then the second one is kind of self-explanatory, the PBAR priorities of safety and Vision Zero, and then maintenance for all users, whether you be pedestrians, bicyclists, freight users, all the users of the system. Maintenance is very important to everyone. And I get a lot of questions from people who know I'm on the back. You know, why can't they just pave the streets? So, you know, that's definitely on everybody's mind. And then the third recommendation, to enhance the role of the BAC from a budget committee to a bureau committee. We keep recommending over and over again. We feel that, you know, we have a lot of groups. I also serve on the Transportation Policy Expert Group and the Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And, you know, sometimes these committees just kind of flow together. And you want to be able to give the director good advice and thoughtful advice, and the membership is really good in terms of the business community, the modal communities, you know, the Elders in Action and other interest groups in the neighborhoods. So I think that we work well together, but we like being a sounding board. We like following these measures, and we would like to continue. But we also want more time to deliberate. You know, getting the decision packages on January 20th didn't really give us time to deliberate on the decision packages. So we would like to be more effective in how we work with the director and the staff on our advice. And finally, we've also recommended several times district liaisons, similar to the liaisons that the Planning Bureau has, because it's a very complex budget with a lot of needs and a lot of priorities, and having a single point of contact. East Portland is lucky enough to have one, but the rest of us don't. So we think citywide, we would definitely benefit from more single point of contact on these issues. So we have hope that the new two-year action plan and the focus on Vision Zero will benefit all Portlanders citywide. And you know, we just want to thank you for allowing us to serve, and we hope to continue serving in the future.
Thank you. You guys did a great job. They're amazing, by the way. They have a great back. I'm lucky. I do. Absolutely do.
So is this question time, or were you?
I can keep talking if you want me to, but no, I have nothing else prepared.
Cut her mic. So what is the status of the $1.8 million contribution grant, federal grant for bike share?
Well, we still have the money from Metro, and we are planning on launching in 2016. What that looks like, I don't have details to share today, but we will be launching the bike share program in 2016. We're going to make good on. Yep. Yes.
I find that hard to believe.
Okay.
So I guess I would suggest that we liberate that $1.8 million because it looks like there's a lot of urgent transportation priorities. It has to go back through JPAC, but I don't think that's as much of an obstacle as you made it sound to me once.
Okay. It returns to Metro, and it goes into a competitive pool. It's not a guarantee that it comes back to the city of Portland. I've never been through that process before here. So
then how do you know it's not a guarantee that it won't come back to us?
Because it has to go to another decision-making authority. So
I guess I'm astounded that we think bike share is still in the offing. Do you have a corporate sponsor in the works? You don't have to name it, but just tell me if there's anybody even at the table.
Yes.
We are talking to potential corporate sponsors. Mm. And I mean, one of the advantages of bike share programs is that in other places it's been a way to bring in outside money. And so it's not just putting up public money. And I think that compared to, for example, all the governments agreeing to waive millions and millions of dollars in tax revenue in order to build a convention center hotel, I think this investment, just as a tourism investment alone, it has merit, in addition to trying to promote biking, which improves health, et cetera, et cetera. But clearly, having a significant corporate sponsorship should be a major part of the package.
And we're still sticking to our guns. There'll be no operational subsidy of a bike share program from government?
Yes.
So I have some questions. So you've done this breakdown of what might be done in terms of enhanced preventive maintenance, but back up for us a little bit, and that is, in the last year you significantly increased your maintenance effort. You did a lot of fog sealing, and yet this talks about grind and pave here, or crack seal, 2-inch grind and pave.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us sort of What's the unaddressed inventory of streets that could get fog sealed but haven't yet? Do we have 100 miles of that? Do we have 3,000 miles of that? How many miles, in other words, if you just went crazy with fog sealing, what's the potential universe of that work?
Right, it's a component of the, I'm sorry, Steve knows?
Well, we kind of estimate, this is just... So my name is Steve Townsend, I'm city engineer. Just kind of estimating off the top of our heads, we've got 4,800 lane miles, right, of which about 3,000 are local. And when you look at the percentages of where the streets are, in order to do fog seal, the streets have to be towards the upper end of the curve, meaning in pretty good shape.
Right.
And so doing this off the top of my head, not having the numbers in front of me, I'm guessing we're maybe in the 400 miles, maybe 500 miles. It might be a category of streets that
could do that. That are ready to fog seal.
I'm not
guessing. You're guessing.
I'm guessing that they may be in that category, okay, possibly. But that's a guess off the top of my head.
So in terms of enhanced maintenance funds, why wouldn't we do those first?
And there's kind of a couple of different things. One of the things is the ones that start getting more expensive is once we start getting past 2-inch grinds and on the collector arterials. Because on the local streets, they deteriorate very slowly, and their cost for repair is much lower than the collector arterials. So we probably get a bigger bang for our buck trying to catch the busy streets, meaning 120 seconds, the Burnsides, the Powell. I'm not going to start to say Powell, but we don't own it. The streets like that before they fall farther down more than a 2-inch grind. Because at a 2-inch grind, you're talking a couple hundred thousand a lane mile, not counting the other things that have to go with it with stormwater and ADA ramps. But if it starts going farther down, it doesn't take much to your 500,000 to a million or more per lane mile.
Steve, generally we use the fog seal on the residential streets,
only on,
right,
the residential streets.
So
that's
correct. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, because the residential streets fail differently than the collector arterials. The busy streets fail from heavy loads, so the trucks and buses are what wear out the pavement. On the local streets, the heaviest thing that goes up and down it is the garbage truck once a week and that sort of thing. And so the local streets fail more by environmental factors of weathering and oxidation. And so that's where fog seal is a good candidate, is on those types of streets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Actually, Mayor, if I may jump ahead, I want to make a note that's relevant to what you just said on the performance indicators. One of them is lane miles of contract paving, and generally we do the 2-inch grind and paves with our own resources. Contract paving is for more than 2 inches, and the contract paving is in there as a performance indicator, not because contract paving is the most important thing we do, and in fact the most cost-effective thing is to do the 2-inch grind and paves where we can, but that's there, I think, largely because we were asking CBO for a significant amount of money for contract paving, because there's some streets that really do need to be fixed, even though they're expensive. And CBO basically said, well, if you're going to ask us for money for contract paving, we want to know what you were able to do with it, so let's create an indicator for it.
Okay, other questions for Leah and her team?
So it's also for you, Mayor, what's the thinking on the youth bus pass?
The thinking, Commissioner, is that PBOT has periodically been asked to absorb the cost of the youth bus pass. So our request is kind of a preemptive strike. We're essentially saying, if you want to do it, please give us additional money to do it rather than asking us to do it for our own resources.
Fair enough. But let me reframe my question, or let me make a statement. I believe the youth bus pass is essential, and so I'm wondering what your thinking is in far as to how to fund it, Mayor.
That's a discussion that's now underway with TriMet and the school district, our other two partners. So Steve and I will be having those conversations with our two partners, both of whom have additional resources just like we do right now.
And I'll remind the councils I do every year that the Youth Bus Pass is a Portland Plan strategy.
Right, and as a practical matter, TriMet doesn't put on any more buses to help get kids for school, as I know from sitting on the 44 during spring break versus sitting on the 44 not in spring break, where we're packed like sardines on if you happen to catch the wrong bus. So I think that discussion needs to be had with TriMet. Is it actually costing them anything? And when we first initiated it, how many ever years ago it was, they thought they were going to be putting on more, that they were going to be providing more service. So, and I even question whether they're losing much revenue from not having kids buying youth tickets, because I don't know how much kids, students use it except for getting to and from school. Even if they do, I would suggest it's a good way to get young people hooked on transit and teach them that this is a really great way to get around town.
Agreed. Katie or Carl, did you have
Yes, I did. I wanted to ask a little bit more about the citywide enhanced transit corridors plan, the your ask around that. What corridors would that be planning for?
It's likely Martin Luther King Boulevard, Southeast Division, and Burnside and Stark corridors.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Powell and...
Inner Powell Outer Division?
Yes. Is that part of this, too?
We have existing staff that is working on Inner Powell Outer Division, so that's okay. Covered.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then... let's see, there was something else I wanted to ask about. One of the reasons, you know, I actually don't have so many questions because you do have such a great citizen advisory committee, and they're already doing such a great job. But I did want to ask about on your dashboard, I wanted to reflect that I would love to see a measure on there that showed how well PBOT covers the whole city in terms of not just roads that need infrastructure repair, but roads that don't have anything on them already. There really needs to be, I keep asking this almost every bureau, making sure that deficits get measured so that they don't get lost. And it's very important.
Thank you for that comment, and we share your sentiment, and it came up during the special appropriations hearing, and our Commissioner Novick directed us to include those assets in next year's report mm-hmm. to start working on that, so thank
okay.
you.
Yeah.
Leah, the dashboard process is a work in progress, and there's a healthy amount of grumbling generally about whether it's the right indicator. And if not, if there's a better indicator. And I have been trying to find the right way to ask this question in every presentation. I'm now going to finally ask it as plainly as possible, which is, of the performance measurements that are in your dashboard, what are the least useful measurements in this packet?
Oh, I think they're all useful, actually.
Okay,
let me stipulate
in the presence of Andrew that they're all important.
Well,
and that in a perfect world, we wouldn't delete any of them. But
all our children are above average.
Yes.
Now, which ones are the best?
Yes. I love all my children. There's no one comes first.
I do.
I'm just asking this as a colleague. Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, just before Director Treat answers, the process of getting to the key performance measures was intended to call out some of the least useful measures, which the Bureau may still track for other reasons, but really just to put the most important on there. Now, I will say, and I think as we've gone through this process, you've asked some very good questions. Some bureaus were more successful at that than others. And I think that's part of the evolving process of this, but the goal really is that all, whether it's 3, 4, 5, or 6 measures, that they are all useful. I think PBOTs are.
Okay. So I better get my question in again before the city attorney jumps in to qualify my question. These are all very useful dashboard measurements. And at least in your case, there are none that start at 100% or at the top of the food chain. I find those the least useful. If other bureaus have things where, you know, all you can do is go down, I think that's probably unfair. If you had to take one or two out and replace them with one or two, what would you take out and what would you add?
That's an interesting question. I would have to, I'm not prepared to answer. I actually want to keep all of these in here. If you look at our Portland Progress that we published, these indicators are all reflected in Portland Progress and then more. So we've actually expanded our performance dashboard internally extensively beyond what CBO is doing. So I think they're all great. And if you look at our bureau and the amount of vastly different services that we provide across our six different groups, it's really hard to call one out and saying it's not important to the public or to us. So these are very important to us in terms of transparency in the services that we provide. And I don't know that I would swap any out. Safety and maintenance are my top priorities. So if I had to pick two, those would be them.
Safety and maintenance. How responsible are you for the on-time performance of Streetcar?
That's a good question. We run through, I'm going to have to ask Greg to help answer that, through the operating agreement with PSI.
So PSI is our nonprofit organization that assists us in managing the streetcar operations. They, along with TriMet, work annually to prepare a schedule for the streetcar operations in terms of frequencies and service. But it is really the cities and TriMet's operators that are responsible for maintaining that schedule and staying on time. And we use a NextBus system to try to track that on-time schedule. And that's one of the things that came up in the audit this year was a need to have a better way of tracking that on-time performance. But when it comes down to it, it's really the city supervisors and the operators that are responsible for keeping the streetcars operating on an on-time basis.
If I could add a little to that, since I sit on the PSI side of the joint operation, I think everything Greg said is true, but I'd also reflect that the streetcar operates on a street system that's maintained by the city, and there are lots of things that we do in partnership with the city to try and make it work better. For example, you know, PDC is now paying for signals at Cooch at 10th and 11th, which will help speed the streetcar through there. You know, we rely heavily on Peter Kuntz and the signals group to make sure that streetcar can get priority at appropriate places. So it's very much a hand-in-hand partnership, and the city has been a great partner and continues to be on that.
So on that question, have we made all the capital investments that we need to make in signal systems along the streetcar route in order for it to operate with better priority? Should we make the policy decision to let the vehicle that's carrying 17,000 people get through and make the ones that are carrying one or two wait?
Well, so at the last board meeting, there was There was a set of recommendations that came from PSI to the board about signal improvements that they were requesting to improve on time and performance and the speed of the system. So and we agree that there are improvements that could be made to increase the accuracy and reliability of the streetcar.
Right. And do those improvements have a capital cost, and do we know the number?
We do not. They were just presented to us last week, so we have not had a chance to, unless
right. So
you have.
We don't have any additional estimates yet for those costs. But there are two sides to the picture. So as Chris and Leah talked about, there are operational improvements by giving priority to the streetcar. There's also the capacity of the cars and the number of spares that we have available. Since there is streetcars that drop out of service because of maintenance issues or accidents, having adequate number of spares to be able to operate the streetcar at the 15-minute frequency that we're trying to get to is also an area where we're a little short right now.
I just wanted to chime in here as a regular streetcar rider. I take it every day to work and back home. That I saw this, and what was actually more important to me as a, you know, a citizen who uses it would be like, how often it's not working. And I know it's relatively reliable, but there have been times where I've needed to ride to work where the next streetcar was a long time in the future. And so, I mean, that would be a key performance indicator that I would be interested in. What's the relative amount of time that the streetcar is not in service that it should be? Which, again, I understand is a low number, but it's not zero.
Yeah, that would be how often we don't manage to dispatch a car for a run.
Or, right. Yeah, similar.
Lee, I can't resist since you're here. We have a few extra minutes. And actually, I'd like to cut into as much of my time coming up so we can get BS and water out and in as quickly as possible. So I now, since I no longer have a car, I take the number 12 bus to work, or I carpool down Sandy. And interesting, the last few days, Sandy has been very rough going west. And the reason is at 28th, between 28th and 27th, there's a construction project. And there's also just further west, there's a big intersection that often is got a flashing light rather than just a red-green. But there's been a tremendous amount of backlog. And one of the, so I was curious today. I thought, was there an emergency? Was there, you know, something? I mean, what was the, because it happens now every morning. It turns out that in that construction project, they have been given, I guess, a permit to take a lane out. And the lane is now filled with the cars, the vehicles of the people working on the construction crew. And I thought, you know, I'm all for helping, you know, create good jobs in our community. It did strike me as an undue courtesy to take a lane out of a two-lane road that is a main thoroughfare rush hour so people could park their trucks and their cars. And I don't know whether that's part of our code or a courtesy or an abuse. So I throw it out there.
I will have to follow up with you, but I will. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but Christine will follow up, and I appreciate the input.
I'd just like to comment on the idea of the dependability of the gas tax when, in fact, you've got more people driving Priuses, carpooling, bicycles, walking, and public transportation. What are you taking that into the forecasts? That's number one. I've got two more. On the PCI data security, there's lost revenue that's been mentioned in here. What's being done to get that back? And on the LED lights going in, what is the payback to pay for, I guess, not a safety factor so much, which is, you know, really important, but it apparently will be a less of a power or electrical bill for the city. So those are the three. The gas. What are you doing about the gas tax, PCI, and the LED?
There we go. Okay. On the gas tax, we are well aware of the issues, and we use the gas tax projections that are provided by ODOT, and then we then further discount them when we build them into our revenue projections because of the very issues you bring up. On PCI, we are looking at raising parking meter revenues to the users. So it's a transaction cost for credit cards. So anybody who would be using a credit card on our parking meters, we are exploring the option of implementing a parking meter increase to cover that cost. That's a process that we will have to go through with the businesses in the community before it's implemented. We have until October before it hits us, so we have some time to figure it out, and we have meetings scheduled to start those conversations. And then the LED, it is, wait, I lost your question. Dang it. So close. It was through the, I don't know. And I'm going to ask Alyssa to, if she knows.
I don't know the payback period off the top of my head. We can get 10 years.
What is 8 or 9 years?
10 years.
10 years. Yes.
I'm curious on the meter increases. Do you have the capacity with the smart meters to charge credit card users only, or would this be an across-the-board increase, including people paying cash or credit card?
Yeah, it's an across-the-board increase.
Okay. Do you know if those meters have the capacity to only charge a different rate to credit card users? I'm thinking, you know, most stores you go into, if you spend less than $5, they tell you flat out, you know, there's a 50-cent transaction fee if you use a credit card, which most, you know, not most, but a lot of parking meter transactions are under that threshold. So I'm just curious whether that's even possible.
It's do they have the ability to differentiate between credit cards and cash?
We could have different
tariffs. Why don't you come on up?
Marnie Glick, Parking Operations. We could build different tariffs into the machine. I'm not sure if they would recognize. I mean, somebody would have to say, I'm doing a transaction with cash, I'm doing a transaction with a credit card, and it would post a different rate. I'm not actually sure we're allowed to charge a different rate for cash and credit card, so we'd have to look into that.
Marnie, what's the current split between cash and credit card?
About 85% of our transactions are with a bank card, either credit card or
people stop
card.
Carrying quarters for meters. It's not part of the culture anymore.
Right. but I almost wonder if it's and it may be impossible or illegal. It seems like it would be much more palatable to sell a meter increase based solely on credit card usage rather than across the board, just even from a perception standpoint.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question. So I'd like you to look into that to find out whether it's legal, because if it doesn't matter to us. The machines, they are capable of taking cash, though, huh?
Yeah, and just we would look into logistics as well.
Yeah, we also have that. Costs around removing the coins, so it's be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, no, when I asked you that question during our meeting on your two-year action plan, I asked you the exact same question because I always use quarters, and you were telling me, in fact, it costs us more to handle coinage than it does to take a credit card. So is that part of the answer?
Yes. So with coins, we actually have to, parking enforcement officers will kind of turn into collectors, and then we pay Brinks right now. They are actually counting the coinage and depositing it.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the cost of being PCI compliant is not going to vary that much with the number of transactions. So if PBOT reduced the number of transactions it had by encouraging more people to use cash, I think that would mean that the cost of coming into PCI compliance would just be redistributed among the other bureaus that are reliant on it.
The PCI is going to be a per transaction cost.
About just over 10 million transactions a year, about 8.5 million of those are with a bank card. So I understand that we would be paying a fee per each transaction.
Okay, so it's not just a lump sum for safety in general. Okay, my mistake.
Yes.
I'd like to address some points to the first indicator, total number of serious incapacitating traffic injuries and fatalities. Safety is very much in the mind of the community. We just saw the Vision Zero report released at the ECTA Transportation Summit this week, and we appreciate Director Treat's leadership and the commissioners on that. And in doing the Our Streets conversation, we basically heard from the community that they value safety and maintenance at about the same rate. I think it was 56-44 is the split we came up with, maintenance to safety. And I'm a little concerned that because CBO's criteria are so focused on maintenance citywide across all the bureaus, that's maybe flowed into PBOT a little bit more than appropriate, and the safety value is not as present. I think it shows up for me in the Safe Routes to School recommendation. That would be one of the first things I would fund with any available revenues. So, I hope we can put some money behind the Vision Zero concept and adjust our priorities appropriately.
Chris, actually, that's a good point. The CBO recommendation for PBOT adds up to about $5.5 million for maintenance and $2.2 million for safety. And our recommendation is that since we have more revenue, that council allocate at least another $2.1 million to PBOT, which would go to safety and would thus give us our 56-44 split for this year.
Yeah, and I just want to respond. We do recommend $2.2 million for safety projects in PBOT. So it's not an insignificant amount of funding. I think the question, if you want to divide that between safety out on 122nd, which is the project we recommended funding, versus Safe Routes to Schools, that's a good conversation for this committee to have.
I think I'm not asking you to reallocate. I'm asking you to allocate more towards safety.
and less towards other key priorities in the city.
Yeah, I just want to take a second, and if I can, offer a gold star to the Bureau of Transportation and Director Treat for their equity analysis throughout their budget. Their motion and equity analysis that they used specifically for capital improvement projects and specifically in East Portland, I think, was extremely well done in evaluating impacts on people with disabilities, communities of color, underserved populations historically. The decision to not translate any new materials into, or at least put out any new materials until they've translated all current materials in other languages, I think is a phenomenal understanding of some of the examples of how to best use equity. I also want to compliment CBO in their recommendation of the project, the road rehab project at 122nd. specifically saying that it may be a lesser risk in some sense, but it's specifically an underserved population, historically has been underserved. And so that recommendation, I think, speaks to CBO's engagement and understanding of what we're really trying to do here, as well as the funding of the collaboration with OPAL and the work that OPAL is doing in conjunction with PBOT. So if I have abilities to offer a gold star, I certainly do that in this project.
Can I just say one last thing in closing to Commissioner Salzman? I apologize if I was flippant in my answer about bike share. It's just something that I'm incredibly passionate about, and it's a program that I'm really excited to launch. And so we may disagree on that, but I'm really excited about it. So I apologize if my tone was anything less than disrespectful.
I would also apologize if I sound overly strident in my opposition to that use of for bike share, but I think we just have opposite points of view.
Thank you.
Both apologies accepted, but confidence in a bureau manager is always a good thing.
But just to end that on a high note, having just come back from San Francisco, the bike share program there seems to be working quite well. And everywhere I walked, and I spent a lot of time walking in a fairly compact city, there were easily accessible stations and people's usually empty, which means they're getting used. So I'm hoping if they can figure it out, we can figure it out. So,
colleagues, not just because I respectful Commissioner Fish's desire to limit the amount of time we spend at BS and Water, but there is some, two things I wanted to add. One is that Marnie Glick, I believe, is leaving us sometime in the not-too-distant future, which will be a great loss. I'm particularly grateful to Marnie for being very tolerant of my indecision as to whether to proceed with buying parking meters under the Calais contract a year and a half ago, and of her ability to work up a new RFP, which led to us selecting a different version of Calais to buy meters from it. But actually, it turned out that in the interim, the cost of buying meters had gone down, so we wound up doing pretty well. And Marnie, of course, as part of the parking team, was instrumental in what I think has been an extremely successful shift in the way we deal with parking for people with disabled placards. So thank you very much, Marnie. And we are also losing this year Greg Jones. And I really have a hard time imagining what life is going to be without Greg. And I'm going to read the entire set of talking points I was given on him, then add some thoughts of my own. Today, I would like to formally recognize one of the most steadfast managers in the Portland Bureau of Transportation, Greg Jones. Greg has dedicated 35 years to public service. He began his career in the Department of Public Works and is retiring as our first assistant transportation director. This is his final budget hearing. Throughout his career, Greg has been a leader in transportation planning, arterial engineering, capital projects, and parking programs. He helped deliver remarkable transportation projects for the citizens of Portland, including the Portland Aerial Tram, the Portland Streetcar, the East Bank Esplanade, the Interstate Light Rail, Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail, South Waterfront Development, McLaughlin Boulevard, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, East Columbia Lombard Connector, Northeast Alberta Streetscape, and Division Street, as well as projects in conjunction with the port, including the Lombard Overcrossing, North Marine Drive, and Airport Way. Along the way, Greg built many relationships, including those with OHSU, PDC, TriMet, ODOT, and FHWA. Greg's commitment to transportation and public service enabled his advancement to his current position, where he's called upon to guide the overall operations of the Bureau. His institutional knowledge is a tremendous asset, and he will be greatly missed by all of his colleagues. Greg is a remarkable but very low-key individual who's tremendously worthy of today's recognition of how he's shaped our city. And just to add something in my own words, although I think these are very good and apt, Oliver Wendell Holmes apparently once said of Franklin Roosevelt, "A third-rate intellect, but a first-class temperament." Greg has a first-class intellect, a first-class temperament, and a spectacularly wide body of knowledge. And I will very much miss sitting in meetings in which Greg happens to be with somebody who will bring up a topic that, a question that nobody in the room can answer, except Greg says, that first came up in 1994, I think it was November 11th, and here's what we did. So Greg, I'm spectacularly grateful for your service, and I'll miss you very, very much.
Thank you all very much. Okay.